This is Father Ted, and you are listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Bunker Podcast. My name is Father Ted, and today we have a very special guest. His name is Matt Pasquale. He is a black belt. I don't remember what degree black belt you are, Matt, but you can tell.
Second degree
black belt. He's training out of Leslieville Jiu-Jitsu right now. But I'll let him kind of go into his whole journey and what he's up to right now. But I've known Matt for actually, I think, as long as I've been doing jiu-jitsu, which is about 5.5 years now, just over 5.5 years. He used to come and train at my old dojo and on Fridays, and used to kind of like really kind of help out and give really great pointers and really good advice. So I really appreciated him, and I still appreciate you. But yeah, I'm really, really excited to have you on the podcast. Matt, welcome.
Well, thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, as usual, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, where you're from, you know, what's your background?
Yeah. So born and raised in Toronto. I started jiu-jitsu basically on my 18th birthday. I went to Toronto BJJ, and at first I was just interested in doing striking because I was watching the UFC, and I think Ultimate Fighter 1 had came out around that time.
Yeah.
And then I remember when I went there, they were like, oh, we just have a jiu-jitsu class. And so I just kind of fell into jiu-jitsu that way. I never actually wanted to do it. I always wanted to do striking, but it's just because I didn't understand what it was. I was a young kid too. I think I was just finishing high school. And I was at one point boxing, doing Muay Thai and jiu-jitsu. But then when George came to the academy, I was a blue belt already. He really got the program up and running, and all the guys started competing and were getting much better. And then I made a switch to full-time Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Being a competitor, I was still in university at the time, but basically when he came, he created more of a system and a better approach. And then guys were going to Worlds and TANs and actually doing well. So I saw that there was like, okay, we could actually go somewhere with this.
Sure.
And yeah, basically I got my black belt, I believe in 2016, second degree black belt now, and myself, and a couple other people, Ty Ty, Hebzy, and Nicole, we opened the gym called Leslieville, Jiu-Jitsu, about a year ago. And that's been my focus right now, trying to grow that system and also, you know, sign people up and get something going on there. But I still train at Toronto BJJ and Leslieville, and sometimes I'll pop into JT6, but those are kind of all the gyms that I'm at right
now. Nice, nice. Yeah. So I didn't know actually that. So George Brito, you mentioned George. So for our listeners, yep. George Brito, you know, who's probably one of the most senior black belts in the city right now.
Yes.
And he, I didn't know that Toronto BJJ was opened before him. I thought he was started.
So Toronto BJJ, I'm pretty sure opened in 2004, 2005. And I started in 2006.
Okay.
So I'm born in 1988, and I started on my, literally on my 18th birthday.
Yeah.
And George came, I was already a blue belt, but there wasn't anything going on there. Like, I had competed before, but not, guys were like doing okay locally. There wasn't really a scene. And I feel like when George came, he really brought up the entire level in Toronto as a whole. And he really made it like something that we could actually do as a career, not something that's just like a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Because before him, there wasn't even like the local competition scene was pretty smart.
Yeah. Yeah. There was Jocelyn's, which was the big tournament at the time. And that was out of Hamilton. Jeff Jocelyn, he was the one who put that tournament on. But it was like a shit show, man. It was like, you'd go there at like 6, 7 a.m. You'd have to register for the tournament same day. Then they would do all the brackets, and then people were cutting weight. Sometimes the tournament would go to like 10, 11 at night. It was just, but this is what I just thought it was. And then George brought a lot of legitimacy. We started competing in the IBJJF tournaments, Worlds, Pans, Europeans, stuff like that. And also his approach to training and the system, I think that was the biggest thing, because when somebody goes to a jiu-jitsu gym for the first time, they don't know anything, and they just assume what's being taught to them is not only the right technique, but also the right way of teaching.
Sure.
And I was I had no talent for jiu-jitsu. I would give myself slightly below average athletic ability. So when I would go to a class and the instructor would teach like 10 things and you'd have only two times to learn it, I just wasn't learning anything.
You know?
And I think I was just getting decent at jiu-jitsu just from training a lot and just like figuring out some stuff on my own. But I was winning blue belt tournaments with two techniques: hip bump sweep and then Kimura off the hip bump sweep. That is it. That's all I had. Close the guard, hip bump. If it didn't work, I tried a Kimura. And if that didn't work, I would just keep spamming it and then maybe win a decision.
Yeah. But, ironically, though, that's still how a lot of jiu-jitsu is still taught, which is like,
Yeah.
not everywhere. It's getting better, but like a lot
I
of
hope
clubs, it's
so.
like, it's still like 10 techniques in one night and you don't remember anything, right? Which is not good, but,
It's not, look, maybe there's some guys out there that could retain all that. The students we have at Leslieville, I communicate a lot with them and I ask them like, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about my teaching style? Was this too hard to understand? And I also, one thing that I do too, so I teach Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday there. Whatever I teach Monday night, when I train on Tuesday, I just try to do what I taught. And then from there, I get some real troubleshooting and like, oh, okay, this is where I'm struggling. So like maybe they're struggling there too. And then I could reevaluate it on Wednesday. So a
Yeah,
lot of
that's
the
good.
techniques, yeah, a lot of the techniques we do at Leslieville, it's kind of like a theme for the week or two. And then we go through it and then troubleshoot throughout the week. And then Saturday we just do a big review. And so they get a lot of exposure to their technique.
So you're almost doing like right from the get-go, the beginning of the week, you're kind of getting like real-time feedback
Yeah,
when
I
you're
try
adjusting.
to.
Yeah.
I try to. Like, I really care, and I always ask them, was this too hard to understand? Were the details missing? And I also ask them like where they're struggling trying to do the things when they're training or in specific training.
Sure. So, okay. That's cool. Yeah, because Leslieville, yeah, it's been around for about a year, you said.
September
Before
7th. We opened
September.
September 7th, 2014.
Oh yeah, so you're coming up to the anniversary. It's exciting.
I know.
Are you gonna do an open
We're
mat?
gonna do something.
You're gonna do
We're
something?
still planning it, but we're gonna do something.
I haven't been able to come down yet. It's not that it's out of the way. It's not that far, but
It's far. It is far.
it's south. It's like, for those who don't know Toronto, it's like it's south, so it's almost down like at the waterfront, right? Like it's
It's very south and very east. And to be honest, that area I probably have been in twice my whole life up until opening the gym, and now I'm there three, four times a week.
yeah.
And I grew up in the city my whole life, and that area wasn't a really good area in the city back then, but now it's a
Yeah.
lot different. Now it's really nice, and there's like a
Yeah.
community, and it's very up and coming families, and I really like the vibe there. I just didn't know about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, definitely. It's you found like a niche, like an area where it was like untapped a bit. So, because the East, for those who know Toronto, the East is heavily, I guess all Toronto, but a lot of the East, North York, right, Danforth area, a lot of jiu-jitsu, right. A lot of it's jiu-jitsu for life, under right. So, it's like you got yeah, like so, like I'm at JT6 now too, right. So that's not that far, like it's another 20 minutes
Oh,
north.
20 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, it's not too bad, but like you got like two gyms on Danforth, like there's so much going on, right? So yeah, no, that's good though. But like but you said so how going kind of going back a little bit, so you were already a blue belt. How long kind of like did you take did it kind of your general jiu-jitsu journey take from like the time you started until you went to black belt?
So white to blue belt, I think I got in about a year. I remember the Caesar, who actually passed away, my first jiu-jitsu instructor passed away, but he gave everyone a blue belt. When I first started at the gym, everyone was a white belt. So
Sure.
the best guy was like two-striped white belt,
Okay.
guy from Brazil. So a lot of guys got promoted at the same time, right before he went back to Brazil, and I was one of them. And then George gave me the purple belt, I believe in 2009. So it would have been a blue belt for maybe 2 years.
Okay.
And
Yeah.
that promotion was really special to me because it was done in a random class. It was like kind of unexpected. And at the time, I had stopped competing. I was in school and I was kind of boxing and kind of like messing around a little bit, not training as properly as I should have. And he made a speech in the class that really stuck with me. And he basically said, like, man, I think this guy, if he really focused himself, could make something out of jiu-jitsu and be really, really good. He just needs to, commit. And then he gave me the purple belt, and those lines kind of stuck with me. And I was a purple belt for 4 years, so I would say purple belt was my growth belt. Where most people, it's blue belt where they kind of discover who they are in jiu-jitsu. But I think I got my blue belt a little too premature, and also I wasn't talented, and so it took me a little bit longer. But I was purple belt 2009, 10, 11, 12. And I believe I got my brown belt in 2013. Yeah. I competed a lot at purple belt, and that's the belt that I would say that I became what I would consider like somebody who's good and competent on mats. And then brown belt, I think 2013, 14, and then 15, 16 is when I got my black belt.
So you really kind of found yourself and your game in purple, you're saying?
Yeah, and I competed a lot during purple belt, a little bit at brown belt as well too, but I opened my strength and conditioning facility in 2015, September 1st. So coming up 10 years, and I had stopped competing and focused on that. And I was a brown belt at the time.
Okay.
Purple belt was my, where I made the biggest jumps in jiu-jitsu, where I felt like I started to understand jiu-jitsu. I started drilling a lot more, which helped me a lot, and competed at very high level.
Nice. And did you compete all the way from white belt?
I did two tournaments at white belt. I got smoked. I did a lot of local tournaments at blue belt, and I did pretty good. I won some. And purple belt is when I competed the most. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Like, for me, I don't know, because I just got my purple, so I can't really reflect too far back, but I can say though that I stayed at blue for a while. Like I stayed at blue for like, I think 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And that was a time for me where kind of like, it was eye opening. Like I really kind of found, I think that like, I kind of found my game, even though now of course there's a lot of work to be doing and like refining and things like that.
Yeah. But
I don't know what purple belt's going to be like with competition. Like I compete a lot too. I did compete quite a bit at blue.
Okay.
Both locally and also IBJJF. Like I went to Worlds twice. And a few places in the States. I did Masters North America, and I felt like that was kind of my big growth. I guess like I really understood a lot from the time I got my blue belt till the end of the blue belt. It was night and day.
And I think that is how it should be. You know, white belt's a crapshoot, right? Like, I think white belt, because everyone's like, oh, what's a good white belt? I don't know. Like, to be honest, like, I was probably a terrible white belt. Like, I wish I could almost upload each version of myself into different belts, like my white belt, blue belt, purple belt, and brown belt person, and then, like, train with them. Because I've been training for so long, like, I only know your level compared to what my current level is.
Yes.
You know? So I don't really care what your belt is, but it's like, if you're good, you're good. I can feel it. And just because somebody, like, I could feel somebody's good, but they might not get any positions on me. But I know their jiu-jitsu is good. It just needs more time. You know what I'm saying? And I could tell if somebody sucks, but that person that sucks could still beat me or still get a position. They kind of don't align, right? Like if somebody has very little technique, but they just have this one move that they could just muscle, to me, that person's not good. They just have like this one thing they do well.
And they might be more athletic or more stronger, and maybe they can.
Yeah, or like their timing was good. But like when somebody has good jiu-jitsu, you could feel it. Right? Like I know they're gripping. I could see, oh, I go to pass. I see how he defends. I see how he re-guards. I see his defense too. Like he understands how to play the game. He just needs more time and preparation to get really good at the game.
Yeah, I think I know exactly what you're talking about. Cause I remember once, like this is like maybe a year ago, and I had gone up to visit Professor Mike Aviato, right? At Von BJJ.
Yeah.
And you know, I've known him as long as I've known you. And of course, you know, I met him when I was a white belt. Right. So I didn't know anything. I don't know anything still, but you know, I didn't know anything then. And, you know, I hadn't seen him in a while. And so we rolled together because he, you know, he's crazy and he'll roll with anybody, even though I'm like 310 pounds. But you know, he said afterwards, he goes like, you know, you've learned how to play. You've learned how to kind of like roll and not be crazy and, you know, explore things, right? Like you're calm when you're rolling. Right. And he goes, that's like the best thing. Like, it doesn't matter whether you know, I'm a black belt. He goes like, you know, it's like, you're not gonna be able to do a lot of things against me per se. You're still a blue belt, but at least now you've kind of come to that point where you understand the jiu-jitsu itself.
Yeah.
And you're exploring things.
I rolled him at the last JT6 open mat and his jiu-jitsu is unreal. And again, I'm 6'4" and 220 and I could like, if I want to be a dick and just like close the guard on him and just like not let him move. What does that accomplish? But you could feel his level and he could feel my level and we could both share this experience together. And it's like a win-win, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I view like, you know, training with guys and how good they are and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I understand 100% what you're saying. Do you feel that at all the different levels, was competition like a how big of a factor was it with your progress? Like, did it push you to progress faster? Did it hinder you? Like, what was the effect on you?
It definitely makes you better.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, like I don't even know if I like competing. Like I definitely like winning, but I think everyone likes winning. And I definitely don't like losing. I don't mind losing to somebody who's better than me, actually. This happened recently. So I started competing at black belt. I think I've done maybe six or seven tournaments at black belt. And the matches I've lost three matches, and two of them I'm totally fine with. Those guys would beat me probably 10 out of 10 times. I know who they are. They're extremely good. But I lost this one match, and it was very close. And that haunted me, dude. Haunted me. And I'm like, went home and I'm like, I signed up for another tournament right away. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go win this tournament and maybe the feeling will go away. And it just didn't go away. And the last tournament I did really well. And like, I was able to display a lot of jiu-jitsu as well. But there's some, yeah, I think it makes you better. Definitely makes like everything more real. And when you're training in the gym and oh, you got your guard passed or you got swept, it's like, okay, whatever. But in a tournament, those are like major things, right? Especially if you're competing at like a lower time limit. Like if you get swept in a 5-minute match, that could be the whole match, you know? So
Well,
it definitely makes you sharper, and it also makes you better at learning how not to get scored on. You know, I think being a good jiu-jitsu competitor is a skill as well, and learning how to score and not get scored on is a skill in itself. When guys sweep you, how can you scramble out? Okay, maybe you get swept. How can you get a position that you can sweep back? You know,
yeah.
it's like a different type of game. And I think the guys that I train with that compete, their details are sharper, and they're like they just have a little bit of an X factor, and you can feel it too. Like everything's just a little bit sharper.
Yeah,
You
and
know?
you're right at that like point of between the super heavy and the ultra, right? So you're on, you're just under.
No, right now I'm small. I'm like I've
You're
competed at
super.
ultra. Right now I'm like 215. So I'm like,
Yeah, you're in the super. Yeah.
yeah, but normally I'm like 230.
So
But I've
yeah,
been
you go.
training. I've been training a lot more. Just with opening Leslieville, and like I just can't keep up. Like my weight's really low, like lower than it's ever been. But normally I would have to cut a little bit for super, or I just do ultra.
What do you prefer?
Depends on the day. I think super, so I just at least know like I'm not gonna have to face a massive guy. And I have no problem facing really big guys. It's just sometimes I can't display the jiu-jitsu that I have. You know, I never feel like they're stronger. I just feel like, you know, I'm a guard player and like I like close guard and sometimes it's hard to close the guard on those guys and like get to your positions and they could kind of edge out a victory. And
Yeah.
if I'm okay with losing it as long as I get smoked. You know, like if somebody beats me, I want them to like, okay, that guy for sure. But if somebody like beats me because like I opened the guard and they were able to get a little advantage on me or make me turtle, it just feels shitty. Yeah.
Yeah,
So.
I agree. And I'm one of those guys, right? Like,
Yeah.
I'm the ultra. I actually think that they need to split up the ultra because the ultra is it's too big of a range, right? Like it's anything from 222, right? And above.
Yeah, 222 in the gi and above.
Yeah, but that's like crazy when you think about it because you can have a guy who's 225, right?
Yeah.
230, and then I'm 310 or 3, right?
I think the reason why they have that weight class though is just because if they split it up more, sometimes those divisions already don't have a lot of guys. So if they added like a
Yeah.
240 division, now you would divide it even more.
Yeah. No. Again. I'm just saying though, it's a big range, right? Like,
It is.
and I'm complaining as a 300-pound because I've gone up against guys who are four,
Really,
like
yeah.
ginormous, right? And that's even big for me. Like, I can't move them, right? I can't move them in the standing. I can't. If you get stuck, like you said, if you get stuck underneath them, you can't even sweep. Like, they're just so heavy, right? So, yeah.
But like I've trained with you before a bunch of times, and like even though you're a 300 pounder, you know how to move, and you don't feel like a 300 pounder. Like there's guys who are just big and they just feel like sloths and they just lie on you, and like, you know, when you compete, there's stalling and there's advantages and there's like match tactics. So, you know, I don't want to compete against a guy where I'm like trying to fake cross choke him and look at the ref and be like, see, he's stalling and try to sell a stalling penalty. But sometimes you got to do that. Like, if you want to win, it's not always who has the best jiu-jitsu. It's like who could just win. And I've had matches like that before where I'm like, you know, cross choking the guy and the ref's looking at me. I'm looking at the ref. He starts giving the guy penalties. And then the guy has to stand up randomly and I'm able to sweep him. But, you know, that's just the game.
Yeah, but you're forcing the
the forcing open, right? The depression, like showing the ref that I'm actually doing jiu-jitsu, and this guy's decided not to do jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, because otherwise it's boring.
Yeah, and I feel like at super heavy, the guys have a little bit more technique, and they're just a little bit more proficient, and also you know the guy's probably going to be like 218, but I find super heavy is an interesting division, like. When I, especially at like now I'm at Masters 2, I find super heavy doesn't have a lot of guys. Guys are either heavy or they're ultra. Just like, you know, really? I'm 37, and some of the guys, when they get a little bit older, you know, their diet might not be in check anymore. Maybe they're on a little bit of gear and they like are just a bit bigger. So they just go to ultra. Mm-hmm. Or they're like, they used to be middleweights and now they're a little bit thicker and they're just heavyweights. But every time I look at tournaments, it seems like super heavy doesn't have the most amount of guys.
I don't know. I don't have a lot at ultra either.
yeah, it depends. If you go to a high level tournament like a Masters Worlds, for sure there'll be guys there. But more like the last tournament I did was Detroit Open, and there was only one guy at super, and I was like, man, I should have just done ultra. There was two guys in ultra, like I would have just done that. And
yeah, well, you know what? Like, I can only find a big division like in like Worlds, because like I even did Masters North America.
Yeah.
Like in Long Beach, and there were three guys.
Are you Masters 2?
I'm Masters 3.
Okay,
I'm old, dude. I'm 44.
Okay. You look good.
Thank you. That's good.
One thing you could do, though, is since you are Masters 3, you could go Masters 2 and Masters 1 if you want to.
Yeah.
You could always challenge yourself down.
Sure.
I know it's, like, not the best because, like, okay, now I got to face some 30-year-old who's jacked or whatever. But, like, you could do that if you need to.
You know what? I've done it. Like last two Toronto IBJJF Opens, right? I dropped down divisions.
Oh, okay.
And I won both of them.
Okay, good.
So, yeah. So it, you feel better because if you win the gold and you're fighting the 30-year-olds and you're the 44, you feel a little better because they're faster, right? It makes a difference. 5 to 10 years makes a big difference.
I think it does too, and it also depends where you are in the like. If you're, I find Masters 2 is kind of where things start to slow down. But if you're like a 35-year-old, or sorry, a 36-year-old in Masters 2 versus a 40-year-old in Masters 2, it's a big difference. Masters 1 is still really, really, especially at Black Belt, is a very competitive division. There'll be M1 guys who have like won adult worlds and do both. Like Adam Borzynski could do Masters 1. He's competed at Masters 1 before, and he's like arguably the best heavyweight in the world right now.
Yeah.
So at M1, like the two losses I had at M1 were like really good competitors. That are not just good Masters competitors; they're good adult competitors too.
Yeah, they're at the point where they kind of can do both sides, right? So doing both.
But M2 is where things start to slow down slightly.
Sure.
Yeah.
What was your favorite? Like, I guess, what was your favorite competition experience? Do you have one? Like in your whole career?
I think so. The best competition I ever did was 2011 Worlds at Purple Belt. So I was able to get bronze in my weight class, and then I got bronze in the absolute.
Nice.
I don't know if that was the best competition experience I had. I think the best competition I ever did was Chicago Open at Purple Belt.
Mm-hmm.
And I did ultra heavy that year. And I think I had four or five matches because I did the absolute as well. And I submitted everybody.
Nice.
So that part felt really good. I felt like I displayed really good jiu-jitsu, but the best feeling was in the final. So I was with Alessandro Chichi, and we faced a guy named Jonathan Tatava, who's a really, really good Marcelo Garcia student. Really good. Mm-hmm. And Chichi faced him in the semifinals, and he lost a very close match. I beat my semifinal guy, so it was now me and Tatava in the final. And it was in a... It was a hockey rink, so there was like hockey, like glass boards and stuff. And it was the last match of the entire tournament.
Oh, wow.
So it was like me, Chichi, Kleber, and like whoever the guy was with too.
Yeah.
And Chichi was like one of my favorite guys to like corner me and coach me. He pulls me aside. He goes, Matt, I want you to do this. As soon as the guy touches your collar to make a grip on the feet, jump forward. And I go, Chichi, like I've never done that in my life, bro. Like, he's like, no, just trust me. I'm like, you sure? He goes, I'm sure. Matt starts, slap, hands. I jump. He tries to pull single leg X. I jump right to mouth. And I was able to crush open from mouth. So it was sick. Oh, wow. And then, like, I celebrated hard, and we went and got steaks after. Yeah. So I think that was the best, like, competition moment. Because honestly, if I had pulled guard on him, I probably would have lost. The guy's really good. But yeah, I have to give Alessandro the credit on that one.
You had to be unpredictable.
It wasn't even that. It was like he's a single leg X player and he pulled single X on Chi-Chi. So he knows this, he's going to grab your collar and sit to his butt right away. So if you jump forward, you're going to end up right mount.
He doesn't have time to insert the leg. Yeah, that's cool.
Exactly. And I
Nice.
did. This is exactly what happened.
Wow. That's cool. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a good story. I'm just digesting
It was
it.
a lot of fun then.
That's
Yeah. And
cool.
able to submit from the mount too. And then like there was no one there. So I ran to the boards and like jumped on the boards like it was a hockey celebration. Because like,
Yeah.
I grew up playing hockey when I was a kid.
Sure.
But yeah, it was fun.
Nice, nice. So in all your jiu-jitsu journey, like for the last, how many years, what do you think was kind of like the biggest, if any, obstacles that you ever had?
So I've been training for 19 years.
Okay.
The biggest obstacles, I think most people would say like injuries. So I want to kind of rule that one out. That seems kind of obvious. But
Sure.
I think the biggest obstacle is confidence in like my mentality. Like I was not the most confident kid. And I'd say like jiu-jitsu was one of the things that I like was able to get proficient at and that like gave me a lot of confidence too. But in the competitions, we're from Toronto, which is like not the biggest jiu-jitsu city. So sometimes you go and you'd see these guys from like GF Team or Atos, these Brazilian kids, and like I would look at these kids and be like, man, I've already lost the match. Like they're gonna smoke me.
Yeah.
And I think that as a competitor, that was probably like one of the biggest obstacles to like go into a tournament and be like, okay, I'm good. Because I remember 2012. Every local tournament I did, I won, and I was confident. Like I'd go to these tournaments and be like, I'm gonna kill everybody. And then you go to Worlds and like, okay, I'm facing this like Brazilian guy with like a Gracie Barra Gui who like doesn't speak English, who has like 10,000 names. I'm like, oh, this guy's gonna kill me. But like, why? He's just another guy that trains and competes just like you. You know what I'm saying? So I think
Did they kill you though, or did they not kill you? That's the
I lost to a lot of Brazilians, let's say that.
Sure.
I've been some too, but yeah. So I think that was the biggest thing from a competitor standpoint. And I think the biggest thing from just like a jiu-jitsu lifestyle hobbyist standpoint too, from that aspect, is just being able to withstand the like grind of training. If you train a lot, and for anyone that trains a lot knows, like it's really hard. It's really tough on your body. Especially if you're natural, especially if you have other things going on. Like I don't even have children, but I couldn't imagine like you have kids and a family and stuff. But I've always had a either another job or a like something in my life, like full-time school or careers and stuff like that too. So kind of juggling all those things. And it's hard, man. Like showing up to the mats every single day and just, after 19 years still going to the mats and like being excited about jiu-jitsu. But what I've learned to do is almost turn jiu-jitsu into like little mini games where now I'm going to the mats. I'm like, okay, today I'm going to let everyone pass my guard and start at a deficit. Or today I'm going to try to sweep everybody with this one sweep. Or try to, only play half guard to start. So I almost gamify it now. So it becomes exciting still.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And you sharpen your skills as well, like specific skill sets.
Yeah. And then every now and then, like usually every 2 months, I do like nobody's safe day where I just try to go and kill everybody. Those are
Well,
the days when like people ask me, like, man, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm good.
yeah, well, I can, I got three kids, so I can testify that
Yeah.
it is, yeah, it's hard. It's hard. Like,
Yeah.
balancing everything. Especially if you want to compete, if you want to train like 3 to 4 times a week, it's a lot, right?
Yeah.
And if you're older, like I started late in the game, I started 38 years old, right?
Yeah.
So I was already, really old. But you know what, like again, like you said, if you love it and it gives you like the game is good, like it kind of relaxes your mind too, right? It's a type of therapy. Like it's just like,
Yeah, it's like active meditation.
yeah, 100%, right? Because when someone's trying to kill you, you can't think about anything else.
Yeah, I had this conversation with Mosley the other day.
David, yeah.
I think he's been training like maybe 15 years. And I said, if one snap, all your jiu-jitsu skills were taken away from you right now, would you restart jiu-jitsu knowing what you went through? I said no.
Really?
Yeah. Because think, I knew what I used to be. So somebody takes all my skills, literally all my skills. I'm now a white belt. I knew what I felt like before, and I'm starting the journey again at 37. Remember, you started at 38, but you didn't know what you were starting. I already know what's about to happen. I don't know if I would do another 19 years and learn the skills again and like have, dude, there were some tough training sessions that I went through. Like when I was a kid, when I was like 19, because I was a very underdeveloped kid too. I was weak. I only started to get strong around like 24, 25, just getting beat up by everybody. Like I'm telling you, man, I was the kid at the academy that like was way below the 50th percentile. I'm not talented at all. The only thing I had, only natural attribute I had over people was I had good cardio, and I just understand how to just like commit to something. You know, that's it. I just know how to train every day because I'm like, okay, these guys are better than me. I just have to like train a little bit more than them, and I'll catch up eventually. Might take 10 years, but I think eventually I'll catch up. And that's all I did. I just trained more.
I can identify with you.
Yeah.
I have no athletic ability whatsoever.
Yeah. And
I
it's like, it
suck.
is what it is. Like, I can't complain about it. It's just like, let's take Nate. Nate Dos Santos, highly talented and highly intelligent. Okay.
Yes.
And then also he trains a lot. Like, it's no wonder he's like a killer.
Yes.
Right. Like, I saw him from day one. He was very smart. He understood, like, okay, I'm gonna just copy what the best guys are doing and replicate my game because if I want to be one of the best guys, these are what the best guys are doing. You know, and he's also an athletic guy. Like the way he moves, he's so quick. I'm not quick. I have pretty good strength. I developed a lot of it, and I have a decent gas tank. Like for me, I've never gassed in a match before or anything like that. Like I feel like I have naturally good cardio.
Well, you know what? Listen, I think, I don't know. I don't want to say, I don't want to offend the really talented and naturally gifted jiu-jitsu players out there, but I almost respect the ones who don't have the talent but still do well, because there's more to, like, again, it doesn't come naturally. There's more to overcome, which means that you need to have much stronger mental, discipline, right? To kind of, it's not to knock, again, it's not to knock the world
I
champion,
understand what you're saying.
but you know what I mean? Like, when you have more things against you and you can still show up and you can still produce, right? Like, you can still, like, for example, like, okay, not everyone competes, but like, let's say you compete, you can still go out there and you can still win and you can still, like, somehow,
Yeah.
pull it off, even though you do not have the body or the strength or the speed or any of that stuff that other people have, right? I don't know. I respect that a lot more because, yeah, it's like, just, it's not easy. You're right. It's super hard
Yeah.
and horrible.
And I think jiu-jitsu lends itself to all different body types and different athletic abilities because like you could just get good at a certain style and like overcome that. Like if you look at all the if you took like the guys everybody who just won worlds and not all of them are freak athletes, you know. Some of them might have attributes that make them special, but some of those attributes might be they're hyper intelligent or they're just understand how to like get really good at that one position. You know, I train with Adam Morzinski every day when he was here for a week. I don't think he has any natural abilities that set him above anybody other than he is obsessed with training. Every single day he rolled like 15 rounds, you know, and he's really smart too. Like one of the guys did a private with him and I was the Uki and I like saw how he explained his jiu-jitsu. Like everything he's doing is on purpose. He's not just, oh, I just put my hands here and tip him over. No, he understands angles. He understands why counters, like that's his ability. And it might have taken him 9, 10 years to finally win a world championship, but eventually he did it and he just stuck with it. Because the year before he won, I was at International Masters and I saw his match. He got triangled in like the first round. And then the next year he wins worlds and taps everybody. You know, so he's like
That's a
I think that's why everyone likes him because he's like, he really showed like if you just stick with something and continuously just work at it, you could become the best. And that's what
yeah.
he did, you know?
Well, and a lot of people don't realize this, like, if you follow like some of the best in the world, not all of them were winning from the beginning. It was like that.
Correct.
Like, they suck, 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 and then suddenly, like, there's a turning point, right? Like, even Gordon Ryan, when he was young, right? Like, yes, he's won a lot, but
Yeah.
like, you, like, I'm just using, like, the most popular example, right? But like, he lost a lot, and then there's like a flip, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And then you just know, and then you start, refining, refining. But I want to ask you, though, like, as a black belt, like, okay, so there's a lot of different opinions about, like, what makes a good black belt. And then some people say, okay, should be a person who kind of is, you can't be an expert in everything because it's impossible, right? Obviously, like there's millions, one could say millions of combinations of different like techniques and things like that in jiu-jitsu. You can't know everything, right? But is it like to be a good generalist or like a proficient, let's say, generalist, or is it okay to, for example, be like really amazing at like one or two things? Like that's your game. No one can stop you. Doesn't matter, whatever. And to be not ignorant of other things, but just not really that great at other techniques.
Like, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I've had this conversation a lot of times with my friends. I think if you want to be a very good black belt competitor, you need to understand your game and understand how to get there and then have good general jiu-jitsu. But I think the guys who win world championships, they are very, very proficient in like their technique. Again, I'll use Adam as an example. You know, like you could almost predict what he's going to do before the match starts.
Sure.
But he knows how to get to those positions. He's good everywhere, but he's great at those positions.
Yeah.
If you want to be the best instructor, I think having the larger database of knowledge will be the best.
Yes.
You know? So the best instructors I know a lot. They might not be the best when you roll with them, but they have a huge database of knowledge. The best competitors have a good database of knowledge, but they're crazy good at certain positions and they know how to get there. And then they also like know how not to get scored on. They understand rule sets and the game.
They're like specialists.
Yeah.
Because specific things. Yeah.
So I guess the question, like what makes a black belt? It's really hard because there'll be black belts who are really, really good. There'll be average black belts and there'll be bad black belts.
Sure.
And to me, it's just like that person has to be only compared to themselves. You know, I can't expect somebody who starts jiu-jitsu at the age of 50, who has a full-time job, a mortgage, a wife, kids, to reach the same level as a 10-year-old kid who starts, who's like a savage by the age of 22. You know? So is that guy a black belt? Is a 50-year-old a black belt in the or not? And then that guy's a black? I don't know. For me, I just think you have to be compared against your own version. And yeah, as long as that person keeps showing up to class and is doing the best job possible, they should progress through the belt system based on what the instructor feels is the right way.
Well, that's also why we have divisions when it comes to competition.
Correct. Right?
It's the only way you can somehow compare apples to apples, I guess you could say, right? And even then, it's not perfect, right?
But like, say if that same guy goes and gets smoked by everybody he competes again, like, should he get his black belt? I don't know. Like, it's not for me to make that decision, but what, you can keep the guy at brown belt for the rest of his life?
Well, I agree with you. And the thing is, though, you don't need to make that decision, even if you could, right? Because I think it's like the ecosystem of jiu-jitsu, like the community,
kind
of sorts that out on its own.
Yeah, that's one thing I really like about jiu-jitsu and I like about weight training as well, is that it's very hard to lie in jiu-jitsu and in weight training. Like if you're like, oh, I could squat 400 pounds, I could very easily put 400 pounds in a bar and be like, okay, squat it. And in jiu-jitsu, if you're like, I'm really good, I'm sick, like you could roll with the guy and see if he's sick. And you could also see him roll with other guys and tell. But, you know, there are AOJ blue belts who would roll with me and tie me in a knot. Like, am I not a black belt all of a sudden?
No,
it's hard to say because like these kids is that blue belt now a black belt? And a lot of people say that. They're like, oh, that guy's a black belt level. But like, he's not, he's a kid, he's 16. Just because he's been training for 10 years and he trains full time doesn't mean he's all of a sudden a black belt. And there's more that goes into being a black belt than just pure jiu-jitsu skills.
Yes.
Maturity, how you are as a person. Like, I wouldn't, as somebody who hopefully now will award a black belt to somebody who started at Leslieville, I would hope that person is like a good citizen as well. And they have good morals and they like represent me well.
Yes.
You know, and I think with George, like all of his black belts, me being one of them, like we're good representations of him. Like people could speak about us in high regard. We're not, you know, ripping people off and doing shady stuff and bad businessmen. Like we're good people. And I think that's important too. And I think that's a part that's downplayed. You know, I wouldn't want to award a black belt to somebody who like abuses his wife. Like what, you know, he might be the best in the world though.
Yeah. And as a gym owner, you would, well, I would assume knowing your personality, you would you would address things like this if you see them happening, right? Like as far as like the gym culture, like, you know, there's all these things, right? It's not just, you know, come here, you know, I'll take your money and whatever you do. Like, you're not gonna police people in their private life, but when it spills over into your gym, into your culture, into your community, right? It needs to be addressed because it's more, like, I agree with you. It's more than just technique.
Yeah. And, you know, now owning and operating a gym with my partners for the last, you know, almost year, there are certain situations, not to that severity, that have happened that I've had to deal with. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is the stuff that they don't tell you about, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, and you have to deal with it. Yeah, it's hard. Right? It's hard. Yeah. The dynamics and the politics and all these kind of things, right?
And it's different. Like, I've had a strength and conditioning gym for 10 years. And even though there's like a hierarchy to some degree, the hierarchy in jiu-jitsu is like very prominent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you step on the mats, like everyone knows their place right away.
Yes.
You know, you have a visual representation of that too. But also, mm-hmm. like when you roll with everyone, you're like, okay, that guy is this guy. Everyone's that guy's top dog. And so there's this constant flowing hierarchy. And so like we have also young kids that train there too, like 16, 17, 18 year olds. And I want them to be good men and good women.
Yes.
And I want to, like, yes, I'm your jiu-jitsu instructor, I'm not your parents, but at the same time, like, I want to be a good influence on you. And if I see you doing stuff that I don't agree with, I'm going to say something.
Yes.
Or like a gym where we're just lifting weights. It's like, I don't really have that same connection with you. Jiu-jitsu is very intimate. You know, yes. Day one, you're getting mounted by a stranger. Like, you have to talk to the person. You have to, you share an experience together. And since it's so intimate, I feel like I, as the instructor, could have that effect on their lives as well. Versus, oh, I'm just a personal trainer and, you know, I'm not going to really speak about those other things.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree. Yeah. Not everybody agrees, unfortunately, but within the jiu-jitsu community, I guess it depends on how you view your dojo and how you view your culture. And yeah. Is it just a business? Is it a community? Are there friendships? Like,
yeah.
What's your job as an instructor, right?
We're still sub 200 students. So the community is very tight. Because any jiu-jitsu community, let's say 100 people, 20% never come right off the bat. Yep. You have people that you won't see ever. They'll come once in a while. 20% are going to be diehards, and then everyone's kind of in the middle. You know? Yeah. So, yes, there's 110 people there. There's kids. So maybe there's like 40 of those are kids. So really the community is like 50 really strong people. And I can manage 50 people. As the gym goes to 200, 300, 400, I might lose touch of the middle ground people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a balance, right? That sweet spot. Like they say that human beings, like the biggest kind of group that you can kind of maintain any kind of meaningful kind of real relationship with is 150 people in your life.
Yeah, exactly. That, right? I forget what it's called, like Dunbar's number.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of referring to. And right now we're there and it feels really nice and special. Like these are the guys who were there from day one. Obviously, I want to grow the academy, but as it grows, we're going to lose that same feel, which sucks. But at the same time, like, you need to grow. It's a business and the business needs to grow.
Well listen, maybe you lose it, maybe you don't, because like, okay, it doesn't have to be only you.
Yeah, true. Right?
Like if you, like, yes, you get bigger, you might have multiple coaches and those multiple coaches can have closer connections to groups, right?
That is true, yeah.
Like at JT6, we have this, right? JT6, it's kind of like at that level right now where it's like expanding. So it's getting big, but not, it's not super big yet, but it's getting big, right?
But you can see that the cliques kind of form.
Yeah.
It's like we're the morning group, we're the midday group, we're the night group, you know?
Yeah. But not necessarily in a bad way. It's like, you know.
No, not in a bad way.
It's like Nick does a really good job of knowing pretty much everybody. I don't know how he keeps it in his head, right? Because you can tell. Like, you can tell when your instructor knows not everything about you, but they know, right? And you can tell when the ones don't care, right?
Yeah.
But again, it's like you have your no-gi days, you have your gi days, right? And the no-gi day instructor is a different guy. And he knows all his no-gi guys. And sure, it's a little bit of a clique, not a negative way. But at least, though, that tribe, that subgroup within the thing, they have a strong connection to that instructor. So there's still that family. And when we all come together, you know, I think, like, when we had the grading, like, a month ago, right? And it was interesting to see. It was my first time, because I just switched over, like, 3.5 months ago. It's interesting. It was interesting to see, like, there's so many different coaches, and not everybody knows everybody, but there's this kind of overall still strong community connection.
Yes.
So you can kind of not, you can delegate a bit, like, to, you know, to
manage. No, that's one thing. Me and Nick have talked a lot about business stuff and jiu-jitsu and just life. He's done an excellent job with building a community. And I think a lot of people don't appreciate that part of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, where the community, especially for men, you know, I think for men, it's very important to have a community they can go to with other men and, like, share something and talk to guys and not feel like they are not heard or they have no one to talk to. Because I think the statistic is, like, most men who are in their adult age have zero friends. They have no one they can talk to, especially if they're married and they're just kind of, like, grinding through work. They have, like, a shitty job that they don't really like. And I think only other men could understand this, the internal stress of what it's like to be a man in this world. I'm not trying to complain and be like, oh, it's so hard. That's not what I'm getting at. But I think when you go to a jiu-jitsu academy and there's other guys and we're doing something physical together, and then after, you could, like, talk to that guy and be like, hey, I'm going through a tough time right now. And he could, like, look me in the eyes and we have this shared experience. I think that's the part of jiu-jitsu that keeps people along for a long time. You know, that's something for me, the community aspect and, like, having close friendships and the people I could rely on and always a space that I could go to that's going to be there at all times is the thing that has been the reason why I train so much and the reason why I have done this for almost 20 years.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, on that note, since we're coming up almost to an hour, I'll ask you kind of, like, the final question.
Cool.
So what would be your best advice to somebody who's just starting out now?
Just starting out. Okay. Don't be scared. I would say, a lot of people are scared. I think they're scared for two reasons. It's very intimate, you know? So if a female comes to a gym, I totally understand, right? They're going to be on the ground. Maybe it's a guy that's with them and there's, you know, maybe some history, a traumatic history that's there, but don't be scared. All, at least that I found in our community, like the Jiu Jitsu for Life team community, most Jiu Jitsu people are super friendly and super welcoming and they want you to get good at Jiu Jitsu. They're not there to hurt you. They're there to make it really easy, especially in the beginning. When I first started Jiu Jitsu, it was not like that. So I actually got my arm popped in an arm bar on my second day.
Wow.
I always tell people this story as an 18-year-old kid. I used to wear a hat down to here because I had a face full of acne and I was really shy. I rolled with this Brazilian guy who had two stripes on his white belt. I'm an 18-year-old kid. I don't know what I'm doing. He puts me in clothes guard, arm bars me, pops my arm twice. That has never, ever happened since. Imagine on that day if I walked out the door and be like, you know what? Jiu-jitsu is not for me. My entire life would have changed.
Sure.
So I always tell people, like, it's up to us to make your first experience with jiu-jitsu very friendly and very positive. Like, we're not there to hurt. Yes, jiu-jitsu probably will hurt you. Just like if you drive a car, I'm sure you'll get in a car accident. But we're not going to hurt you, you know? And the community is so strong and it's so positive that, you know, this is something that's going to be very beneficial for your life. You not training is doing a disservice to yourself, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say the biggest barrier for somebody walking in, especially if they're a little bit older, I don't want to get hurt.
Yes.
That's the biggest barrier. So I always tell, like, we always do a first day class, and then we are very slow in introducing people into rolling live rounds. And then I'm always particular with their partners, and then I always make it a situation.
Yeah.
Because when I started, it was, all right, here's a bunch of white belts, go on roll. And yeah, like if somebody gets, if I had gotten my arm popped and I was like a 30-year-old, maybe I wouldn't have, I would have been like, yo, this is stupid. Like, what am I doing?
Even 5.5 years ago when I started, dude, like right before COVID, like that's how it was. It was like, here, I didn't even know what rolling was.
Right.
Right.
And imagine if you had gone hurt that day and then been like, jiu-jitsu's not for me. Yeah. 5 years later, you'd be a totally different person. Different experiences, different friends, different everything.
Everything. Everything. You know? Yeah, I agree. And I was lucky because I was just a big guy. So maybe I was kind of like somewhat protected from getting really injured, right?
Yeah, somewhat durable, strong, guy, you know.
Yeah, yeah, right? But if you're a small guy and, like, some crazy, like, not crazy, but, like, you know, more aggressive person is rolling with you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was terrifying. It was terrifying. It was terrifying for me for other reasons, too, because I was really, really overweight and I didn't, you know, just there's a lot of, you know, you have your psychological, you know, insecurities and things like that. And
I totally understand that.
A lot.
I was a very insecure kid, very insecure, yep. Very shy, would not look adults in the eye. I remember when we were warming up, they didn't have loner gi, so I'd wear shorts and a t-shirt and my hat. I tell you, the brim was down to here, so I didn't have to look at anyone. And but I just didn't know any better. I was young. You know, like, I was just like, oh, I guess this is how it is. And there was also not a lot of other academies. There was, like, two. There was that in combat arts, and combat arts was in Mississauga.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is just how it is. But I think now like, my generation of, like, people who are now opening up academies, we're trying to learn from those experiences. There's always time for hard training. Like, you could always train hard. You could always do more. You could always do 10-round days. You could always do burpees and sprawls and all that shit. But, like, if it's the first person's first time, we don't need to expose you to that level yet. I'm not trying to scare you with jiu-jitsu and be like, this is going to be so hard. Trust me, it's going to be hard, but you're going to learn that it's going to be hard. Just like weight training. Somebody comes in their first day, we're doing body weight squats, light sled drags, because I could always make the training harder.
Yes.
You know? And maybe when I was younger, I was young and kind of stupid. I'd, like, try to impress them with how hard of a session I could run. Be like, oh, I'm going to crush this guy, and then he's going to sign up. No, people don't want that. You could always crush somebody. Crushing somebody is the easiest thing to do.
Yeah. You got to ease them into it.
Yeah. And make them fall in love and commit. And then slowly expose them to hard training. Okay. Mount specific now. Okay. You're going to train with this guy now. Oh, that's hard. And then they, like, feel the challenges, but they've already bought into what we're trying to do.
Sure.
You know? And I think, like, some people might disagree too, but with Toronto BJJ, what's separating the whole white belt program from a business standpoint was brilliant. It might produce worse blue belts, but you're going to be able to produce more blue belts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they have it where you don't get to train with everybody until you get to blue belts.
I see.
Right? Which everyone now, just like other academies that are small, everyone just trains together.
Sure.
Yeah, you might not be as skilled at blue belt, but during blue belt, you could be like, okay, I've gotten to blue belt already, which means I've probably committed for about a year and I've already bought into what's happening. And now I could really go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
From a business aspect, I think it's smart.
Well, yeah, it's a trade-off, right? But you do, yeah, like, it helps with retention.
Yes.
And if the point is to keep people in jiu-jitsu for the love of the sport, you're succeeding.
Yeah. And from a business aspect, retention is massive.
Sure.
You know, because all gyms have something called churn, where it's like people signing up, falling off, and it's something you're always battling. And if you want to grow an academy to 500, 600, 700 students and grow something big, you need to retain people. You can't just have 10 sign up and 9 fall off.
Sure.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is good advice. Thank you.
That's right.
All right. So on that note, I think we'll wrap it up. I really appreciate your time, Matt. It's been about an hour, and I know you're busy. I want to thank you, like, just not only, like, for your time, but also, like, you know, everything that you do for the community. You are, like, a prominent member in the Toronto community here. You know, you've helped me a lot. Like, every time we've rolled, every time you've been very gracious with your time and your advice. And it's helped me a lot along the journey. I still can't get out of your single leg X, but it's okay. You know, but I'm getting better. You haven't rolled with me in a while. So maybe next time.
Yeah. Next time you'll have that high step out, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate you killing me every time. It doesn't do me any favors, and you shouldn't. But no, I really appreciate it. So I thank you for that, and I do hope that your new academy continues to grow. You guys, you want to plug your other training center? You want to plug the name?
So my main gym is Apex Training Center, and that's just a strength and conditioning gym.
Sure.
And we're located really, basically beside Yorkdale, 300 Bridgeland.
Oh, nice.
And then Leslieville Jiu-Jitsu. Best thing to do if you're in the Leslieville area is just send the Instagram a DM or email us. And that's right on Carlisle and Dundas in a massive building. And that's been open for coming up to a year. So one gym's 10 years, the other one's about a year.
Beautiful. Well, everybody check it out. They're awesome places, and follow him on Instagram. And we thank everybody for listening. I thank Matt, and we'll see everybody in about a week. Take care, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and YouTube.
And if you want to reach out with any questions or if you're interested in being on the show, feel free to email us at bunkerjujitsu@gmail.com. Thanks and take care.